welcome.
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, brought to you by the OU Israel Center in Jerusalem. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Chayei Sarah. This coming Shabbat, we announce and bless the coming month of Kislev. Rosh Chodesh will be Tuesday and Wednesday next week in Yirtz Hashem. We'll talk a little bit more about this in a couple of minutes. But let us, without further ado, do Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tihiyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai miya amod, ki imacha haslicha lema'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro ho'cholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael, mi kol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha-omidim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha-makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim, mi tzara lirvacha, u'meyafela l'ora, u'mishibud l'gu'ula, Hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. We will shortly have two pieces from Shiurim I gave this week, one on the Eliezer issue in Chayei Sarah, the other on Mincha, which has the connection to this week's Sedra because it is attributed to Yitzchak Avinu and the verse from which we learn the association between him and davening in the afternoon is in Chayei Sarah. But before that, let me talk a little bit about the Rosh Chodesh benching, specifically because what we have coming up is not only Rosh Chodesh Kislev, but the 30th of Cheshvan, and the 30th of Cheshvan is not a date that appears in every Jewish year. It goes like this. We've done this many times in the past, but it doesn't hurt to review, I hope. I always like to do this because most people that I run into know very well 30 days, half September, April, June, and November. So if you say to them, how many days in August? They'll either know it at 31 or count on their knuckles and tell you 31. February, they'll give you the whole business with 28 or 29. Ask them how many days in Tammuz, in Iyar, in Shvat, in the first Adar, the second Adar, and most people, most fine Jewish people, religious people, are not acutely aware of the workings of the Jewish calendar. So I like to share that with people since it's sort of a hobby of mine. I guess what I'm about to explain now is like a kid who asks his father a question and was not really expecting a long-winded answer, wanted a simple answer, but I don't do simple answers for some things. It goes like this. The Jewish calendar, the months of the Jewish calendar, are based upon the time it takes the moon to go through its phases. That cycle, from our perspective on Earth, is a little bit more than 29 and a half days. If it would be exactly 29 and a half days, then months would be conveniently fixed, alternating 30 days and 29 days, because 29 and 30 average out to 29 and a half. In practice, it's a little bit more, 44 minutes and a couple of seconds, more than 29 and a half days from our perspective on average for the moon to go through its phases. So our months have to match that by averaging out to be a little bit more than 29 and a half days. In order to do that, there have to be more 30s than 29s, and for various other reasons, which I won't go into now, the adjustment cannot be made just by adding an extra day every so often. It has to be a little bit more fine-tuned than that, And it's accomplished by, in one month, adding a day sometimes, and in a different month, taking away a day sometimes. Still favoring the adding of the extra day, because we're looking for an average that's more than 29 and a half days. I hope you're following so far. The two variable months for this purpose in our calendar are Cheshvan and Kislev. The months starting with Tishrei has 30 days. Cheshvan's normal number is 29. Kislev's normal number is 30. Tevet 29, Shvat 30, the regular Adar 29. We'll leave out the issue of two Adars now. Nisan 30, Iyar 29, Sivan 30, Tammuz 29, Av 30, Elul 29, alternating all 12 months. However, the adjustment is made for various reasons that sometimes there's an extra day in Cheshvan, and sometimes Kislev is missing a day. Kislev usually has 30. In some years, we take away one day and have only 29. Cheshvan has 29 days. In more years, we add a day to give it 30. We don't add to Cheshvan and take away from Kislev during the same year, because that wouldn't do anything. So we leave the months in their normal order and arrangement, or we take away from Kislev, or we add to Cheshvan. This year is a 12-month year to which we add one day. Basically, what this helps us do is make it through the year from this year's Rosh Hashanah to next year's Rosh Hashanah. If we would not add that extra day, besides the fact that the lunar cycle will not average out properly to match the months, we also won't we would have to have Rosh Hashanah next year on a Wednesday, which you can't have. So that's a little bit of how this works. The bottom line is that this year has a 30th of Cheshvan. Whenever that happens, Kislev has 2 days Rosh Chodesh. So just like Cheshvan and Kislev are variable, Rosh Chodesh Kislev and Rosh Chodesh Tevet are variable, sometimes one day, sometimes 2 days. This year is called a Shalem, a full year, with the extra day at the end of Cheshvan, producing 2 days Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan and 2 days Rosh Chodesh Tevet during Chanukah. And that's almost the story. One little extra tidbit, pardon the expression, is that the most common year of 6 different possible lengths is a year of 12 months with one extra day from Cheshvan, producing a total number of days of the year of 355, which happens to be the gematria of the word Shana, Shin Nun He, 355. The most common year has 355 days, and we're into one of those such years. That's the story. Next, what follows is a piece of a shiur I gave yesterday. I chopped it up a little so that you wouldn't have a lot of extraneous material, but it touches on the fact that Eliezer asked for a sign from God that he would succeed in his mission to find a suitable bride for Yitzchak, and the controversy that surrounds the asking of signs, relying of on signs, and various other occult arts that fit with it. As you listen, pretend you are a folder of Torah tidbits, busy getting the issue ready for distribution, and hearing some Torah on the way.
Eliezer gets to his destination, and I'm editorializing. He seems not to have a clue as to how to go about doing what he's supposed to do. So he asks God to have mercy on his master Avraham, and then he says to God, ostensibly, I'm going to ask for a drink of water, and the girl who will offer to tip her container and give me to drink, and will offer for my camels as well, that will be a sign that God has given me the proper shidduch for Yitzchak. The Torah says, Terem, even before he finished talking, Rivka comes onto the scene, and the rest is Jewish history. The Gemara says there were people in Tanakh who asked improperly. Some were not answered properly, and others were answered properly, even though they didn't ask well. Example, Eliezer Eved Avraham. Because he could have gotten an inappropriate wife for Yitzchak in this method. On the one hand, the Gemara seems to criticize Eliezer for not asking properly, and in the merit of Avraham and Yitzchak, he got what he needed anyway. On the same hand, but further up towards the elbow, I guess, to use the same image, Rambam says that Eliezer did a wrong thing, not just improper. He says he was wrong. In fact, he says like this, in Hilchot Avodah Zarah, the laws of idolatry, on the chapter that deals with occult arts, conjuring, divination, necromancy, omens, all of which are not permitted, he says, one of them, what is setting a sign? If a person says, I'm going to walk out of my house now, and if a blue bird will be perched on the fence of my gate, then that will be a sign that I should go ahead with my plan to buy a new car. But if there's no bluebird there, then I won't buy the car. This is a violation of Me'onein, it's called. It's forbidden to do. Let's call it borderline idolatry because it is a lack of faith in God and relying on something extraneous. When the Rambam presents this, he said, you're not allowed to do such and such, like Eliezer Eved Avraham. Most of the commentaries on the Rambam jumped down his throat. And they said, look, Eliezer didn't do something totally unrelated, like if there's a blue bird on your fence, then you'll buy a car. He's looking for a suitable bride for Yitzchak. He's looking for a member of Avraham's family, and more importantly, someone who has the qualities and the characteristics of Avraham Avinu. He turns to God for help. That already is a plus. And he gives a test of generosity and kindness that goes beyond the call of duty. Please, I'm thirsty, may I have a drink? Most decent people will say, sure, here. But to go and draw water for 10 thirsty camels, who don't just take sips, involves repeated trips to the spring, between the spring and the trough, and that, Eliezer, we could suggest, thought was a good way to test the quality of the girl. The Gemara still says, not good enough, because it still could have been somebody who would have been nice, but not proper and appropriate. To compound things, what does Eliezer do when he sees this happen? He gives her jewelry and gifts, and then says, who are you? And she says, I am Rivka, daughter of Betuel, granddaughter of Milcah, who was the wife of Nahor, meaning the brother of Avraham. And then he bows down and prostrates himself before God, and he says, thank you. But he jumped the gun. He didn't ask properly. To be a little flippant about it, I wrote about a joke. It's an old joke, of which there are hundreds of variations. You go onto the internet and you type in genie jokes, and you'll get them all, including a lot that I can't say in polite public, in polite company. But the original one, as far as I know, is this old Jewish storekeeper. He had a candy store in the old days, which also had a soda fountain, Cherry Coke, couple of squirts and a seltzer, you know, that kind of stuff. And egg creams. And he's rubbing a Coca-Cola bottle one day, and a genie comes out and offers him a wish. The guy is astonished, but he says, you know, if you're really on the level, I've worked in this store week after week, month and year after year for 20 years, never took a vacation. I'd love to have a vacation. Genie says, consider it done, and the genie sends him off to Florida for 2 weeks, and the genie himself is going to watch the store while the guy is gone. He's behind the counter, and a guy walks in and says, and the genie says, what'll it be? And the guy says, make me a malted. And the genie goes, poof, you're a malted. Now that's a joke, but it always reminded me of this business with Eliezer. Because when you say you asked improperly or imprecisely, and you could have gotten the wrong thing, now the nice thing would have been to give this guy what he really wanted, which was to drink a malted. And except that when you say that to a genie, he interprets it the way he wants to interpret it, and he turned the guy into a malted. Lahavdil, back to the Torah, God didn't have to cooperate with Eliezer. He did not ask properly. He did not act thoroughly properly. But the commentaries don't want to go as far as the Rambam goes to say that it was forbidden to do what he did, because after all, he did devise a reasonable guideline for the right kind of person. There is a book I have in both the Hebrew original and the English translation. The original is called Tamim Tihyeh. Tamim Tihyeh is short for Tamim Tihyeh Im Hashem Elokecha, meaning be pure, straightforward with God. Don't play around with those things that distract a person from his belief in God, and it refers to all of the occult arts. In English, the book is called Faith and Folly. Was written by a Makubo, from a Kabbalist from India, who lives here in Israel. He happened to have been a neighbor of mine in Arzei Abira before we moved to Ramat Eshkol. And the fascinating thing about the book is he was commissioned to write it by the Bagatz in order to debunk some of the charlatans that are pretending to be Kabbalists, in order to distinguish between what we consider to be real and what we consider to be fake. He tells a story in the book as follows. A guy recently got engaged. He told his friends that he was engaged, and the guy says, ah, Mazel Tov, did you check out your names? He said, what do you mean? He said, well, there's this Kabbalist in the old city that before a couple get engaged or before they get married, they submit their full names, so-and-so ben so-and-so and so-and-so bat so-and-so, to this Kabbalist, and he divines whether they will be compatible or not as a couple based on their names, a combination of gematria and other things that the names represent. So he said, all right, can't hurt. So he goes and he has his names checked out, and this Kabbalist says to him, after analyzing the names, don't go through with the shidduch, it's fated to be terrible. Now this guy is engaged, and he loves the girl that he got engaged to, and he goes to his Rebbe to ask what he should do, because he's sweating, he's nervous. This guy said he's a Kabbalist, and he read the names. So So his Rebbe takes him at the time to the Stipler Rav, the Stipler Rebbe. Very, very well-known Hasidic Rebbe. And he already at this time was very elderly and not well and not seeing too many people. But when the Shamus brings the story into the Stipler, he says, let those people in. So the Rebbe and the boy's father and the boy come into the Stipler, and they tell him the story, and he lets out a scream like, oi gewalt. He gives them a bracha to nullify what this guy said, and said that the guy is a total fake, there is no such thing, and you shouldn't listen to it. What it touches upon is that there is something to some of these things, but it doesn't mean that we could play with it and dabble in it. In fact, Rambam and Ramban are traditional in disagreeing as to why one doesn't dabble in these things. Rambam says, because they're baloney. Ramban says, because they are powers that we're not supposed to play around with. One way or the other, you don't do it. But when people get a little taste in this, it leads to problems. I feel this way about a horoscope. A guy sitting in a barber shop. The newspaper is open, happens to be to the horoscope, so he doesn't have anything to do. He forgot to bring a safer with him, he forgot to bring his MP3 with him, and he doesn't have a cell phone with him. So he picks up the newspaper and he reads the horoscope, and he knows he's a Taurus, and he reads the Taurus, and he tosses the paper down, and it means nothing to him. Fine. Later in the day, something happened that he says, oh, that's weird. That fits what I saw in the horoscope. The next morning, he looks for the horoscope, and the morning after, he buys the paper in order to get it. And then he starts relying on it and making decisions based on it. Good time for a business deal, not a good time for a business deal. And then he's talking about Isur D'Oraita, Torah violation. So you don't play with these things. Now all of this is in the same section of the Rambam that he mentions Eliezer, which is why I mentioned it here. But let's come to a bottom line that Eliezer is not to be faulted. Eliezer was okay because he relied on God and he thanked God for it. And still you can't ignore the fact that the Gemara says he didn't ask properly, but he got answered well, which means it wasn't that bad. And we'll leave it at that.
Listen, please, now to a track from an Oif Simchas V'Chaverim album. The track is called Kol HaNechamot. The words come from Seder HaKafot. V'tizkenu L'chol HaHavtachot U'L'chol HaNechamot. May we be privileged to receive all of the promises and all of the words of comfort that our holy prophets have promised us, and strengthen us and give us courage forever. Oif Simchas.
la nekom iz žive tahto nu ali jedej ne vijeho a kedoj šim se zakejno lehola tohuis lehola tohuis lehola nekom iz žive tahto nu ali jedej ne vijeho a kedoj šim se chazkejno se jamcejno oj 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 lo nevesa se chazkejno se jamcejno oj 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 חזקנו סיים סגנו אוי 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 לא נמסח אינן 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 נמתידם כל ההבטחות תידי אורו ממבם וידיבם כל הנחמות
kind of dispute, because it's not they win. It's two different approaches to davening. One approach says tefillot keneged korbanot tiknum. The davenings were matched to various sacrifices and procedures in the Beit HaMikdash. And the other opinion says tefillot keneged avot tiknum. Davening was fixed corresponding to the forefathers. The three forefathers. That's got to confuse kids, I think, you know, when you say three forefathers. Four mothers, that fits, you know. That opinion goes through the following limud. Shacharit corresponds to Avram Avinu. This is basic stuff. I think most people know this. But you should also see the way it's developed in the Gemara. Shacharit is attributed to Avraham. Shene Emar, as it says in the Pasuk, and this goes back to last week's Sedra, Vayashkem Avraham Baboker, Avraham got up early in the morning, El Hamakom Asher Amad Shem, to the place where he stood. It doesn't say that he prayed, but he says he got up early in the morning and went to the place where he stood. Then the Gemara immediately says, Ein Amida Ella Tfila, standing, on a drash level we'll say, means to daven. In fact, we call the Shmona Esrei Amida, and you have to stand when you say it, etc., etc. Shene Emar, Vaya Amod Pinchas Vaya Palel. Elsewhere in the Tanakh, it says, it links standing in prayer. And the Gemara combines these two verses. It's clearly a drash. If you had a pasuk that said, Avraham got up in the morning and davened shacharis, then you would have it clear. It doesn't say that. It says he got up early in the morning to the place where he stood. You could also say that the word hamakom there has that extra meaning of God, and the fact that he was in conversation with God on behalf of the people of Sodom, which was a petition of his and a prayer, But the connection is that other pasuk, Vaya Amod Pinchas Vayipalel, Pinchas stood in prayer and prayed. Yitzchak Tikein Tfilat Mincha. Yitzchak established the prayer of the afternoon, which is why I'm bringing this topic up now, because it's in this week's Sedra. So any talking about Mincha, which I intend to do, will be in honor of Yitzchak Avinu. It says, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Vayetze Yitzchak Lifnot Erev. I'm confusing the Pasuk now. The Pasuk has that he went out Lasuach Basadeh, to commune in the field, to speak, converse in the field, Lifnot Erev, before sunset. From there, the Gemara immediately says, Ein Sicha Ela Tfila, the meaning of Sicha, to converse, is to daven, and it quotes a different pasuk in Tanakh. It's very matched. Each of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov get a pasuk in the Torah, get another pasuk in the Tanakh, which links what they did in the pasuk from the Torah to prayer. And I don't remember that one by heart, but it's a pasuk that speaks of pouring out one's sicha before God. L'shpoch sichi. So again, it's a two-step connection. He went out in the afternoon, or late afternoon, to have a sicha, and sicha from a different pasuk is indicated that it is a form of prayer. Similarly, Yaakov Avinu, this is in 2 weeks, Sedra Vayetze, where it says, Vayifga b'makom, Vayolen sham kivo ha-shemesh. He encountered the place, and he slept there because the sun had already set. And the statement of the Gemara is, Ein pigia ela tfila, and it quotes a different pasuk in Tanakh, indicating that the verb lifgoa means not only to encounter, but it means to pray. One way or the other, we don't picture Avraham Avinu davening Shacharis and Yitzchak davening Mincha and Yaakov davening Ma'ariv, but we attribute the morning davening in honor of Avraham Avinu because of those psukim, and the afternoon davening in honor of Yitzchak because of those psukim, and the arvit davening in honor of Yaakov because of those psukim. That's basically the starting point. Amru chachameinu zichronam livracha, our sages have said, le'olam yehei adam zahir b'tfilat mincha. A person should always be meticulous about davening mincha. Shaharei Eliyahu lo ne'eneh ad ela b'tfilat mincha. Eliezer, Eliyahu HaNavi, when he had this major clash with the prophets, the false prophets of Baal, he prayed during the day for God's help, and he wasn't answered until Mincha time, and it actually mentions the term Mincha. What's interesting about that is we call the afternoon service Mincha, even though in the context of Beit HaMikdash, Mincha has a different meaning. Mincha is a flour and oil offering, and it's not the term for the afternoon sacrifice corresponding to which we have Mincha. So I'm convinced that the davening of Mincha is jointly attributed to Yitzchak Avinu and to the afternoon sacrifice in the Beit HaMikdash. The name Mincha is attributed to the passage with Eliyahu HaNavi, who was answered at that time, and the term Mincha is used there. Anyway, the halacha says that a person should be meticulous about Mincha, because Eliyahu was only answered at Mincha time, and furthermore, Vahatam, the reason that you have to be extra careful with Mincha doesn't mean you don't have to be careful with Shacharis and Ma'ariv, but those take care of themselves. Why? Mipnei she'betfilat Shacharis is mana yadua baboker. Everyone knows Shacharis is in the morning. Bikumo mimitato, when you get up from your bed, you get dressed, and you daven. Yitpaleo miyad, kodem sheye tarud ba'iskav. Before you get busy with whatever you do during the day. V'chein shel ma'ariv zmana yadua bevo'o leveto. Everyone knows the time for ma'ariv is when you come home from your work. V'hu panui me'iskav, you're finished the tasks of the day. Aval shel mincha shehi be'emtza hayom, but the davening of mincha, which is in the middle of the day, then while you are tarud ba'askav, busy with your daily schedule, tzorech lasum el al libo v'lifnot mikol iskav, you have to really pay attention and stop what you're doing. V'im osokein schoro merube me'od, and if you do that, your reward is great. Get the picture. Mincha is easier to forget than Shacharis or Ma'ariv. I'm not talking now about women and obligation of one time a day, twice a day, three times a day. That's really another issue, and because it's another issue, the value of Mincha as one of the three daily davenings is not the same. But from a three-time-a-day davening, Mincha has that special character because it's so small and it often falls between the cracks. It is not at all uncommon to look out the window and see that you've missed it, unless you have a routine of when to daven. Very, very common. To the point where the Mishnah says you're not allowed to do certain things when it's already Mincha time until you've davened Mincha. Because these are the kind of things that occupy a person, and before you'll know it, you'll miss it. One of them is funny because it really doesn't seem to fit our own times, but you're not allowed to take a haircut at Mincha time until you've davened Mincha. For fear that it'll take so long you will miss Mincha. Now I can't imagine, huh?
It takes 2 minutes.
Yeah, so mine with my beard takes 20, but still, you'll have time to daven Mincha. But apparently, some of the commentaries explain in the olden times, it was a longer process, and very often the one pair of scissors the guy had broke, and he had to go to a blacksmith to have it repaired, and you were sitting on the chair or whatever, wherever you took it. I don't know, different things. A more practical example is eating a meal. Shulchan Aruch says, you're not allowed to begin a meal when it's Mincha time. The question is, which Mincha time is that halacha referring to? And that's a significant rub. The Vilna Gaon Shita is even Mincha Gedola, which means, on a practical level, if, let's say, on Rosh Hashanah, you get out of shul, and by the time you get home to eat, it's already Mincha time, you really have to have davened already. And many shuls will provide, if it's late enough when they finish, a minyan for Mincha, but often it falls right between the cracks. You finish too early to daven Mincha, so everybody goes home. By the time you get settled to start lunch, it's already Mincha time, and according to the Vilna Gaon, you really shouldn't be eating. Right. That's something else. Anyway, now, as long as we're talking about Mincha and Mincha, what's Mincha, what's Mincha, I am sure you're familiar with the terms Mincha Gedola, or Mincha Gedola, and Mincha Ketana, and Plag Mincha. So, let us review what that is. The question originates from let's put it like this. First, we daven Mincha in the afternoon because there was an afternoon sacrifice in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Or Yitzchak, what I said before. But let's look at it now from the timing schedule. Is you daven Shacharis when they brought the Korban of the morning, you daven Mincha at the time when they brought the Korban of the afternoon, and you daven Ma'ariv during the time frame when various parts of the day's Korbanot were placed on the fire of the Mizbeach to simmer through the night. The question is, when did they bring the afternoon sacrifice in the Beit HaMikdash? And, of course, part of the question is, do I care as far as when I daven mincha. In other words, I shouldn't have put it like that. In other words, am I supposed to daven mincha when, on a day-to-day basis, they actually brought the afternoon sacrifice? Or is it enough to daven mincha during the time when they were allowed to bring the afternoon sacrifice? And there's a significant difference. The Mishnah says that on a practical level, on a day-to-day basis in the Beit HaMikdash, it was late in the afternoon when they brought the afternoon sacrifice, the Korban Tamid of Bein Ha'arbayim. Practical, I say, because they had things to do before they brought it. Anybody who had a Korban to bring, a personal Korban, be it an Olah, a Todah, a Shlamim, a Chatat, an Asham, whatever, the schedule in the day of the Beit HaMikdash was first Korban in the morning was the Tamid of Shacharit for the community. Last Korban of the day was the afternoon daily sacrifice. In between those two, then there was this fellow's Korban Chatat for an inadvertent violation of Shabbat, and this person's Asham for having stolen something and done tshuva for it and made restitution. And there was this person's Korban Yoledet for a birth, and this one's Korban Toda for a successful year in business, etc., etc., etc. So practically speaking, they didn't bring the afternoon sacrifice at the first opportunity that they would be allowed to. They waited till later in the afternoon. Say some people, then that's the proper time to daven mincha. However, the Mishnah says that was on a regular day. When it came to Erev Pesach, 14th of Nisan, when you needed a lot of time to bring Korban Pesach of all the people that wanted to bring it, that were supposed to bring it, and Korban Pesach is the one exception to the rule, the only Korban that was brought not before the afternoon sacrifice, but dafka after it. Therefore, in order to maximize the time available for Korban Pesach, they davened earlier. They brought the Korban of the afternoon earlier so that they'd have time. And, says the Mishnah, when Erev Pesach was a Friday, they needed to bring it even earlier. Why? Because not only did people have to bring the Korban Pesach, but they also had to finish roasting it before Shabbat. When it's not a Friday, Erev Pesach, then you could roast the Korban Pesach at night before you eat it, freshly roasted lamb for dessert. But when it was Friday, the roasting of the Korban Pesach does not push aside Shabbat, only the bringing of it does. So when Erev Pesach was Friday, in the Beit HaMikdash, they said, we're going to start the procedures of the afternoon daily sacrifice as early as we're allowed to maximize the amount of time given for people to bring Korban Pesach and get it home and roasted before Shabbat. That creates what we call Mincha Gedola, which means a large time frame for davening mincha, and that refers to the entire afternoon, from a half hour after chatzot, after halachic noon, from a half hour after that, all the way until sunset, according to one opinion. That is a 5.5 hour, plus or minus, depending on winter or summer, but on the average, a 5.5 hour time period for mincha. And it carries the name Mincha Gedola. The name is borrowed and used not for that whole time frame, but for the beginning of it. In other words, when someone says, what time is Mincha Gedola, he doesn't really mean, tell me the range of the 5.5 hours that I have to daven. He means, what is the beginning of the Mincha Gedola period? So on a calendar, or in Torah Tidbits, you will see Mincha Gedola is defined as the earliest time the Korban of the afternoon was ever brought, and that defines the earliest time you're allowed to daven mincha. Mincha ketana corresponds to the time when, in actual practice, on a regular day-to-day basis, the afternoon sacrifice was brought. It was never brought, except for Erev Pesach on Friday, at Mincha Gedola time. But at Mincha Ketana time, which is 2.5 hours before sunset, from that point until sunset, according to one opinion, that's the period called Mincha Ketana. Now, on the note of, is that, do I have to daven then or not? There's an interesting, on the one hand, on the other hand, Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof style. On the one hand, we really should wait until Mincha Ketana time to match the time that the Beit HaMikdash had that Korban, especially now without it, without a Beit HaMikdash, because it becomes a commemoration. On the other hand, there are very important practical reasons to daven earlier, like you might forget to daven. And that's a real situation. And that's why many shuls, especially during the week, will schedule a mincha gedola, like we at the center have one. We fixed it 1:20 every day. 1:20 is based on the fact that the latest time mincha gedola ever begins is 1:20. During the summertime with daylight savings time, that's the latest. We really could move it almost an hour earlier, even more than that during the winter, but we don't, because people then say, oh, I thought it was going to be 1:20. Oh, no, you said 1:15. Oh, I thought it was 10 after 1. So we said, look, 1:20, every weekday of the year, that's when we have a mincha here. The lawyers and dentists and other professionals in the area all know it, and they count on our davening on time. And not fooling around. My favorite example is one dentist who will give a shot of Novocaine to a patient, have his hygienist watch the patient while he comes to daven mincha, just in time to get back when the Novocaine takes effect. So that's a little mugzam, maybe, but he does that. Always, mincha gedola time, you're allowed to daven mincha. The question whether it's the best time or not, that's where you get your on the one hand, on the other hand. And the thing that favors it is just the practicality of not forgetting when it gets later and later and get busier and busier. So there are people who stick to it. The additional benefit of it is, based on the Vilna Gaon, that you really shouldn't be doing things, certain things, until you daven, when it's already davening time. But others don't care about that because they say that's not what it meant. When the Shulchan Aruch said you can't start a meal before mincha, they meant the mincha ketana time, or samuch l'mincha ketana time. Now, what we have to add to this is the following. The Mishnah has a dispute between the unnamed first opinion in the Mishnah, who is called Tana Kama, which means the first opinion, the first Tana to opine, and we personify it. We speak of the Tana Kama as a real person, but it could be anybody, it could be majority of the sages. There's usually a first opinion that doesn't carry a name, that's called the Tana Kama, and then a single individual who disputes it, and he gets a name, his name. So in this particular case, the Mishnah in the fourth Perek in Brachot has the Tana Kama saying, Mincha goes until sunset. Rabbi Yehuda says, only until plag mincha. So that's the new term. Plag means to split. A political party is called a miflaga. Dor ha-haplaga was the generation of the Tower of Babel, where the nations were split off from each other with different languages. Plag mincha takes the mincha ketana timepiece, that 2.5 hours, and splits it down the middle. The 1.25 hour before sunset time, halachic hour, meaning longer in the summer, shorter in the winter, that's called plag mincha. And Rabbi Yehuda's argument was, get back to the Beit HaMikdash. Even though it was later in the afternoon that they brought the Korban Tamid, because no Korbanot were brought afterwards, there were things that had to be done before Shkia, before sunset, but after that Korban, not Korbanot. Things like lighting the menorah, and bringing the afternoon incense, and the Kohen Gadol's other half of a mincha. Those had to be done after, and if you go right till sunset in the Beit HaMikdash, there's no time. So he says, let's parallel the way it was done in the Beit HaMikdash by having the deadline of mincha, of plag mincha. Chachamim say, the other opinion, Tanakhama said, afternoon. When it's still daytime, that's the time for mincha. It goes up till sunset. You also know, or some of you know, that that same dispute follows through with when's the earliest time you could daven Ma'ariv. According to Tanakhama, you can't daven Ma'ariv until after sunset. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if he says you can't daven mincha after plag mincha, he also says that you can already start Ma'ariv from plag mincha. And people use that, especially during the summertime, when they want to take Shabbos early, but that's a whole other discussion. Okay. So, in reality, in the Beit HaMikdash on a day-to-day, the period, the hour plus, that the afternoon sacrifice was actually done was from 2.5 hours before sunset until about 1.25 hours before sunset, and that would be ideal if you had your druthers. Another factor, by the way, which pushes mincha quite late is the fact that people don't want to schlep to shul for mincha, which is so short, and then come back for ma'ariv. So most shuls all over the world will schedule mincha for shortly before sunset, disregarding Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, and stall with a shir or a dvar Torah or schmoozing and gossiping. Those are of not equal weight and suggestions is what people should do at that time. And then they'll daven Ma'ariv at the earliest reasonable time to get Kriyat Shema in its time, etc., etc. So there are practical factors, and then there are also this correlation factor that plays a role. Yes. Mincha, of course, got shortchanged by not having the Shema with it like Shachrit does, and the Shema with it like Arvit does, and the Brachot for Shema like both of them do. So it just has a different flavor to it. You know, Ashrei, a token, you know, as opposed to the Psukei Dezimra of Shacharit. Aleinu was there like it is in all of them. The Tachanun is another issue because you don't do that at night, only during the daytime. But Mincha's a...
Okay, we'll stop that here because got off on a tangent for the rest of the shiur, and we could do that some other time. I would like to finish the show with a song that the words come from Rosh Chodesh benching, which we will be doing this Shabbat. Right before we say Rosh Chodesh, Kislev will be on Yom Shlishi and Yom Revi'i, Haba Aleinu L'Tova. We say the passage, Mi she'asa nisim l'avoteinu, he who performed miracles for our ancestors, v'ga'al otam me'avdut l'cheirut, and redeemed them from slavery to freedom. Hu yig'al otanu bekarov, may he redeem us soon. V'kabetz nidachenu, here's where the words of the song start. V'kabetz nidachenu me'arba kanfot ha'aretz, and gather our far-flung brethren from the four corners of the world. Chaverim kol Yisrael, all of Israel are friends, all are responsible for each other, v'nomar amen, and let us say amen. Shabbat shalom, chodesh tov, and don't forget mincha, or shachris or arvit for that matter, and lehishtamea.
The cafe, 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 the caf Chaveirim, 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 kol Yisroel v'noi maromei. Chaveirim, 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 kol Yisroel v'noi maromei. Chaveirim, 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 kol Yisroel v'noi maromei. Chaveirim, 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 kol Yisroel v'noi maromei.
You know, how about one more? This one from Lenny Solomon's Almost on Broadway. You will recognize the tune immediately. Listen carefully to the words. They fit beautifully and add a nice touch as we get ready for Shabbat. Lenny Solomon.
Ah, soup and challah candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. Every Shabbat meal we eat is really quite nutritious. Can I have some chicken served on Ima's special dishes? Soup and challah candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. Umdelelelumdelai, 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 umdelelelumdelai. When I was a little boy, I felt really glad. I'd look forward to Shabbat meals, cause every one I had would be a great experience and put me in the know. Listen to the singing and you think you're at a show. Hey! Soup and challah candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. Every Shabbat meal we eat is really quite nutritious. Can I have some chicken served on Ima's special dishes? Soup and challah candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. Umdelelelumdelai, 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 umdelelelumdelai. Guests would come and go, each Shabbat meal was heaven sent. I'd hear words of Torah and it really made a dent. So now that I am older, I can do the same, you see. With my wife and children, there's no place I'd rather be. Hey! Soup and challah candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. Every Shabbat meal we eat is really quite nutritious. Can I have some chicken served on Ima's special dishes? Soup and challah candlesticks, kiddushin is delicious. You know, we're not singing it in the right order, which is candlesticks, kiddush, challah, and soup. But then the song wouldn't work now, would it? So look forward to the Sabbath each and every day, cause observing it real well can help Mashiach come our way. Take a day for resting and it will improve your life.
For example,
yes,
Shabbat really changed my world. For my kids and my wife, it's great for me and you.
Soup and challah candlesticks, kedushin is delicious. Soup and challah candlesticks, kedushin is delicious. Soup and challah candlesticks, kedushin is delicious. Soup and challah candlesticks, kedushin is delicious.
Thank you. Oh. Goodbye now. Goodbye. Goodbye. Thank you. Goodbye.